Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capitol, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome again, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Laura, former President Trump made his way to Iowa last week and said he's the victim of political interference by federal prosecutors, the result of Democrats' fears that he could be reelected. And a new poll among likely Iowa Republican caucus goers shows Trump way, way ahead. But the big political story around the state last week has been and is still abortion. Late Friday afternoon, Governor Reynolds and State Attorney General Brenna Byrd filed an appeal with the state Supreme Court, asking it to lift an injunction that is blocking Iowa's restrictive new abortion law so that it can take effect immediately. Take it from there, Laura.
So I read the state's brief this afternoon, and they're making a few different arguments. First of all, as we discussed last week, the Polk County District Court put this law on hold. The lower court found that the abortion providers, Planned Parenthood and the Emma Goldman Clinic, have standing to challenge the law, that they are likely to succeed on the merits of their claim that this is a due process violation, and that they would be irreparably harmed if the state is allowed to enforce the law that would ban an estimated 98% of abortions in Iowa. So the state is, first of all, asking the Iowa Supreme Court to look at that decision. This is not a mandatory appeal that the Iowa Supreme Court has to consider. They have discretion. So the state is making the case that they should consider this appeal, saying that the judge got it wrong about the standard of review for abortion regulations, so that the Iowa Supreme Court should determine once and for all whether abortion laws are to be viewed through this undue burden balancing test lens or what's called the rational basis, which is a very low bar that's easy for the government to clear. And then a third major argument in the brief, which I thought was interesting, is that the state is arguing that Planned Parenthood and the Emma Goldman Clinic do not have standing to bring this kind of case at all. And so if they can persuade the Iowa Supreme Court of that, then that would get the whole lawsuit tossed out, basically, regardless of what is decided on the standard of review.
The governor and the state attorney general are asking the state Supreme Court to determine the legal standard of review before any other legal proceedings in the case. They're saying that any legal review of the case without that standard of review guidance would be litigating under uncertainty.
And it truly would be uncertain, because going back to this 2022 ruling of the Iowa Supreme Court, where they overturned the 2018 abortion rights precedent. So five justices said there is no fundamental right to abortion in the Iowa Constitution subject to strict scrutiny. But then those five didn't all agree. Three of them said, we're going to leave this undue burden test in standard in place for now, and that can be litigated in the future. And two of them said, well, we think that right away it should be rational basis, because if abortion isn't a fundamental right, it has to be subject to rational basis review, any limits on abortion. So the two sides in this lawsuit disagree over what that means, because the state doesn't accept that the undue burden standard is the correct standard even right now. They think that after the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs last year, which overturned Roe v. Wade and Casey, that there's no basis for using an undue burden standard anywhere, not just federally, but also in Iowa. And so they just disagree, and they're saying the Iowa Supreme Court needs to resolve this, because a lower court judge cannot interpret the Constitution, cannot devise a constitutional standard. The lower courts are just bound by the Iowa Supreme Court precedent. So they're saying we need the Iowa Supreme Court to step in. Since that ruling of June of 2022, Justice David May was appointed to the court late last summer, and he showed in this more recent event where the Supreme Court was unable to issue a decision because they deadlocked 3-3, he sided with the two justices who would favor this lower rational basis standard. So it looks like there are possibly three justices aligned on each side, and so then it's going to be all eyes on the seventh justice, Dana Oxley.
And Dana Oxley is really the key to what happens down the road here, isn't she?
She is, because she recused herself from the last lawsuit because the law firm in Cedar Rapids, where she used to be a partner, is representing the Emma Goldman Clinic, which is a party to the case. And of course, they are still representing the Emma Goldman Clinic in this case, but since Justice Oxley is no longer in private practice, it's an open question what she might do. The Iowa Supreme Court justices make these decisions on their own. A former justice, Bruce Zager, he recused from all cases involving a certain law firm the whole 8 years he was on the court, whereas Justice Edward Mansfield recused from cases involving his former law firm for about 4 or 5 years, and then he stopped recusing after that. So really, we do not know what she's going to decide to do. But if the Iowa Supreme Court hears this interlocutory appeal this fall, we should get a pretty good idea when there are oral arguments. We'll know whether she's sitting on the bench or not.
And of course, the governor and Brenna Byrd and others issued statements right after this appeal was filed, and they fell under the usual lines. The governor said, "I will never stop fighting to protect our unborn children." Brenna Byrd said the right to life is the most fundamental right of all. And Ruth Richardson of Planned Parenthood North Central said the appeals are yet another dangerous attempt to force politicians into Iowans' exam rooms. And that's really what the pro-abortion, shall we say, or pro-life people are saying, is that this is an effort by the state to force people to be held or be held under the state's rules on whether they can have a baby. That's the argument.
Right. And I mean, those are all political statements. Everything that you just read is a political statement that really has no bearing on what the Iowa Supreme Court will decide, right? Because when the Iowa Supreme Court takes up this appeal, they're not going to be thinking about whether the governor is fighting to protect unborn children or whether the politicians are trying to get into women's exam rooms. They are going to be looking at the legal issues. What is the proper standard of review for a case that involves abortion restrictions? Who would be irreparably harmed by either blocking the law or letting it go into effect? And does Planned Parenthood even and the Emma Goldman Clinic, do they legally have the standing to bring this kind of a case? So those obviously politicians aren't going to issue statements about things like that. But that's what the court ruling is really going to be about, those nuts and bolts legal issues.
Let's try to explain a time frame on what might happen and when it might happen. We're not talking about something in the next few days.
No, the Iowa Supreme Court is on its summer recess. So if they decide to hear this appeal, they would presumably schedule arguments for sometime this fall. And their term begins September 1st, but I doubt they would be hearing arguments that quickly, because usually once they've accepted interlocutory appeal, then there is a certain time period where the state would submit a full brief. Then the plaintiffs in this case would have time to submit a response brief. And then the state, which is bringing the appeal, has a certain number of weeks to submit its final brief, its final reply to that. And then there would be oral argument scheduled. So this is not going to be resolved in a matter of just a few weeks.
So let's summarize where we are as of this Monday night. Abortion remains legal in Iowa up to 20 weeks of pregnancy. However, there are a couple of howevers.
Yes, there is still a requirement, a 24-hour waiting period. That's been in effect since last summer as a result of that Iowa Supreme Court ruling that overturned the precedent. Also, there is an ultrasound requirement that goes back, I believe, to 2017, that an ultrasound has to be performed prior to an abortion. And right now, there are no limits on medication abortion. That is the abortion that happens when people take certain medications. There are a couple of different regimes, and I think the majority of abortions in Iowa are right now still medication abortions rather than surgical abortions.
A handful of clinics across the state are offering elective abortions, and there's no law against Iowans traveling to another state.
Yes, and one thing that came out after last month's split decision with the Iowa Supreme Court that Ruth Richardson of Planned Parenthood North Central State said, she talked about what she called a manufactured state of confusion, that even this whole past year, when abortion has been legal in Iowa up to 20 weeks, they are still seeing an increase of women from Iowa traveling to their clinics in Minnesota for an abortion, because there's just a lot of confusion around the question, even though they could obtain an abortion in Iowa, because I guess of the Iowa being a Republican controlled state and Republican politicians being very clear about their goal of banning abortion, that there seem to be a lot of patients in Iowa who are under the impression that abortion was already banned.
Minnesota and Illinois have almost unlimited abortion. Nebraska has 12 weeks.
That's right. There is a clinic in Omaha that offers abortion under the very recently adopted Nebraska law up to 12 weeks. Minnesota, I mean, there are some limits, actually. I think they have a 24-hour waiting period as well. And Illinois, I mean, those states have basically codified a Roe v. Wade type of regime. So prior to a viability point in the pregnancy, a very, very few limits on abortion.
All right. You spent a long time putting together a very long piece on Bleeding Heartland about pressure that you wrote the governor had turned up on the state Supreme Court in terms of the abortion law. How so?
Well, we're in an interesting situation because for the first time in almost 25 years, all seven of the Iowa Supreme Court justices are Republican appointed. And so you would think that we have a Republican governor and that the relationship would be very friendly, but that just doesn't seem to be the case. The governor has been very critical. Of course, you would expect in a situation like last month when the Iowa Supreme Court didn't allow the 2018 abortion ban to go into effect, you would expect the governor to say something like, well, I was disappointed by their ruling. But she used some very harsh rhetoric, saying that they were just engaging in pure politics, accusing the three justices who didn't let the law go into effect of comparing an unborn child to trash, which absolutely is not what they're said. And she issued some really harsh, not only written statements, but at that event where she signed the bill into effect, the new bill, she was very critical of the Supreme Court. And one thing that I wanted to bring into that piece that I just didn't have time to cover in May when so many things were happening at the end of the legislative session, but there was a last minute cut of a little more than $1 million to the judicial branch budget. And I was not able to find out from the governor's office why the governor insisted on this cut, but they had agreed on a draft budget for the judicial branch for the coming fiscal year. And then just days before the legislature adjourned, the governor demanded a reduction in that. And so that was the kind of thing where even though it wasn't reported in the media, that's certainly something that the Supreme Court justices would be aware of. And also remember when the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in April about this, whether to allow that 2018 abortion ban to go into effect, Governor Reynolds showed up at the arguments, which is very unusual for the governor to attend oral arguments in the Supreme Court. And without getting permission ahead of time, she and her entourage took a private elevator up at the backside of the building and walked right through the Supreme Court justice's private office area and hallway to get to the chamber, which I couldn't find anybody who had ever heard of something like that happening. And so I felt that that was a gesture of power. And just, I mean, when that happened, the Supreme Court Chief Justice's counsel put out a statement, a letter to counsel of the parties saying, we didn't authorize this. And just to make sure, because they didn't want to create the impression that they were favoring the governor's position. But that kind of tension in the relationship is what I would consider unexpected when you have a Supreme Court where five of the seven justices were appointed by this governor and the other two were appointed by her predecessor.
So let's cut to the chase. Let's summarize all of this again. In spite of all the noise out there, everything that's been going on for the last 2-3 weeks, abortion remains legal in Iowa up to 20 weeks.
That's right. And we will find out this fall whether the Iowa Supreme Court will hear this appeal, but it will probably take several months before we get an Iowa Supreme Court ruling that determines whether this new abortion ban can go into effect or whether it will remain temporarily on hold while litigation proceeds.
And we'll be here for all of it. It is 13 after the hour on this Monday night, whereas we go live. And this is KHOI's Capital Week with Laura Bellin and me, Dennis Hart, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. You don't have to go anywhere else. We're here every week at this time to talk about what's been happening in and around the state capitol and what it all means. All right, President Trump, former President Trump, he wants to be the future president again, came to Cedar Rapids last Tuesday. We are still awaiting, as we go live on Monday night, for word that he might be indicted for the January 6th insurrection. There was some indication it could happen today, Monday. It did not. We'll see what happens. But he came to Cedar Rapids on Tuesday, and he had a lot to say, Laura.
Yes, the special counsel Jack Smith's office, I mean, they've held their cards close to the chest, so you don't really know it. I mean, the former president has said that he received a target letter. It seems, given who has been interviewed, it seems like maybe an indictment might be coming, but it could happen tomorrow or it could be weeks from now. But yes, as you say, Donald Trump, it was a busy week. He came to Cedar Rapids. The town hall meeting that was moderated by Sean Hannity of Fox News, honestly, it had more of a feel of a campaign rally than an interview. I felt it, the audience was overwhelmingly Trump supporters, so they he interrupted by applause on many occasions. The questions were very friendly from Sean Hannity, and really nothing. I mean, that I would say there was only one question that maybe seemed to suggest a little bit of disagreement, and then he didn't really push very hard on that. So it was a lot of Donald Trump, as has often been the case at his rallies, where he talks about his grievances against the current administration. He claims to be the victim of political persecution. And this was something that the interviewer sort of furthered and moved that kind of narrative along rather than challenging that narrative.
After he appeared with Hannity, he went on WHO radio in Des Moines, and he insisted he did not pick a fight, and that he has a good relationship with Governor Reynolds, though the week before he had ripped her to shreds on his Truth Social website, saying she owed his election to him. He doesn't invite her to rallies, but it wasn't him. He wasn't picking a fight.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing with, if you follow Donald Trump on social media for any length of time, he does tend to make these fairly impulsive posts. I mean, that obviously wasn't something that came from his campaign staff. It wasn't thought out. I heard a lot of Iowa Republicans grumbling about that, that they wish he wouldn't say, be so negative about people. And I mean, his claim, again, we talked about this last week, but I just want to emphasize, I don't really know anyone who thinks that Trump was the reason Kim Reynolds was elected in 2018. That was a very close election. And she, it's true that several weeks before the election, he did headline a rally for her. But I think that things really, that she started turning the corner a little bit later, closer to the election. And the Democratic turnout was quite high that year. And it's generally believed that Democratic turnout was very high in reaction to Donald Trump's administration. So it's, I find it very unlikely that Kim Reynolds actually owes being elected in 2018 to Donald Trump. But obviously, that's something that's very important for him to keep saying. And I'm curious to see whether, if they ever do appear at an event side by side, whether he's going to try to say that to her face.
And she said last week she is still open to appearing with Trump on the campaign trail, even after he had harshly criticized her.
Yes. And I mean, it's important to Governor Reynolds to keep emphasizing that she is neutral. I think that most people, they look at how she has behaved toward the different candidates. She has appeared at events for several different candidates. It's hard to avoid the conclusion that she does seem a little bit more favorably disposed toward Ron DeSantis. I mean, they are so complimentary toward each other. She appeared at that event in Johnston recently with Casey DeSantis, the launch of Mamas for DeSantis. So not only, I don't know of any other events where she has appeared with a surrogate for the candidate, and as opposed to just the candidate himself or herself. So I think that I understand why Donald Trump and the people around Donald Trump perceive that maybe she's not as neutral as she makes it out to be. But it's important for her to at least project some kind of neutrality. So I think it would be, I would be very surprised if she had come out and said, like, no, I don't want to do an event with Donald Trump. Of course, she's going to be open to appearing in an event with all of the major contenders.
You know, it looks as if DeSantis is going to have to unleash those Mamas for DeSantis very soon now, because there's a new poll out that Fox Business did this past week showing that Mr. Trump is burying Mr. DeSantis in a survey of Iowa Republicans likely to be caucus goers. It isn't even close to being close.
I want to say, first of all, that the Iowa caucus goer electorate is notoriously difficult to poll. It's a lot easier to figure out who's going to vote in a primary than who's going to show up for 2 hours on a cold night in January. So that said, there is just no good news for Ron DeSantis in this poll. I mean, an absolutely commanding lead, basically a 30-point lead for Donald Trump overall among people who say they're likely to attend the Iowa GOP caucuses. And he just leads in most of the age groups. He has a huge lead among people without a college degree, which is the majority of Iowa adults who don't have a college degree. He also has a pretty big lead among people who do have a degree. He is doing well among voters under age 35, which I thought was interesting because Ron DeSantis is quite a bit younger. He's a whole generation or almost a generation and a half younger than Donald Trump. But according to this poll, Donald Trump is doing better with some of the youngest Republican caucus goers. But people who are very conservative are very favorable toward Trump. And DeSantis is the second choice among a lot of those people, but that's not helpful. The way the Iowa caucuses work, people are going to go there. They're going to write on a piece of paper who's their choice. They're not going to write their first, second, and third choice. They're just going to write their first choice. So Ron DeSantis needs to figure out a way to get people to say that they've had enough of Donald Trump.
The truth is DeSantis's campaign has not gotten off the ground across the country. They've talked about rebooting it. He has fired some staff members. He even went on CNN last week. He would never go on CNN if he were doing very, very well in the campaign, and he's not doing very, very well.
Yeah, I think they've tried to keep him away from the media, and they've realized that that wasn't helping them very much. So now he's going to be doing some more sit-down interviews. I mean, one problem he has is just he is not as comfortable working a crowd, working a group of people. That's fairly clear if you watch him interacting with people at the events. But I think the more basic problem is that Donald Trump, I mean, is just still very well-liked among Republicans. And when you talk to the people, the campaign operative type people, the opinion leaders, they will tell you, oh, you know, Donald Trump is unelectable. We really need to move on. And in fact, a lot of the legislators who endorsed Ron DeSantis said they like Donald Trump. They like what he did as president, but we need to be able to beat Joe Biden. But if you look at this Fox News poll, I mean, what was interesting was that even among the people who said the most important thing is winning the election, that those people favor Donald Trump because they think that he's the guy who can win the election. And that's not what the opinion polls necessarily show, but that is what a large segment of the Republican base believes. And so to shake them of that belief is going to be challenging. I mean, watching this interview on Fox News, I haven't seen the ratings to know how large an audience it had, but this was just great publicity that Trump had last week from this town hall in Cedar Rapids.
To be specific, that poll we're talking about shows Trump at 46%, 16% for DeSantis, 11% for Tim Scott, then Vivek Ramaswamy at 5%, Mike Pence at 4%, Chris Christie, Doug Burgum at 3%, and the rest have 1% or less, including Ryan Binkley.
Yes.
At 11. Go ahead, Laura.
Favorite. It was a great poll for Tim Scott, honestly, because it showed he has a lot of room to gain. There were basically about 90%, almost 90% of the poll said that he was somebody who they could theoretically support, whereas Mike Pence, almost 40% of the respondents said Mike Pence is somebody they would never support. So Tim Scott seems to be well-liked by a lot of groups. He's doing well among the women in the poll. As we've discussed before, I still see him as kind of running for vice president rather than running for president, but he's positioning himself very well. He doesn't seem to be alienating any important part of the Republican base.
Now, Laura, you implied that Ryan Binkley, in fact, you said it was my favorite. I do not have a favorite, as you know. Ryan Binkley, want to be very clear, I have no favorites in this. Ryan Binkley did make news when he said the Lord had told him to run, and you have to respect the Lord.
Yes, well, I thought it was interesting last week. Doug Burns, who writes the Iowa Mercury email newsletter, he interviewed Binkley. He went to a Binkley event and he interviewed him. And apparently one of the challenges for Ryan Binkley is to qualify for these Republican debates that are going to happen. And you need to get 40,000 contributors as well as getting your poll numbers up there. And so he is organizing screenings of a movie, that movie, The Sound of Freedom, that is very popular among conservatives right now. And hoping that people who show up for these movie screenings are going to give him a dollar so that they can be listed as one of his campaign contributors. So I thought that was a clever strategy for somebody who's obviously not pulling in big crowds just on his name ID.
One other person came to Iowa last week, and this Perry Johnson, businessman, presidential candidate, showed up in Des Moines touting his 2 cents plan. It's obviously 2 cents of every dollar of discretionary spending. That isn't going to happen, and he's not going to win.
It's not going to happen. And the federal budget is really complicated. And it sounds great. Like, well, let's just cut spending by 2%. But when you start getting into it, because a lot of people will say, well, they want to protect Social Security and Medicare. They want to protect the defense budget and veterans benefits. And so to cut overall spending 2%, you've really got to make fairly large cuts in a lot of other programs, everything from farm subsidies. I mean, just there are a lot of things that the government does that people like, and they might like the sound of cutting government spending, but when you really get down into it, it's not that popular a position, frankly.
All right, the big event is coming this Friday at the Iowa Event Center in Des Moines. This is the annual Lincoln Dinner. They're all coming, and the speaking order has been made. Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump are going to appear together for the first time in Iowa, but they won't be speaking that close together.
That's right. You've got a baker's dozen of 13 candidates scheduled to speak, and Ron DeSantis is third in the speaking order. Donald Trump is last. I am going to be watching remotely. But one thing that I'm going to be looking for, the Republican Party of Iowa insists that all of the speakers are going to be limited to 10 minutes. And I'm really curious to see whether they actually cut everybody's mic after 10 minutes. That's what they are saying, that they are going to do that. And so this is an opportunity for a lot of these candidates. Miami Mayor Francis Suarez, this will be basically his first chance to speak in front of a large Iowa audience. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, I think also this would be his first large appearance at a Republican event. And this is another example, as we've talked about before, a big advantage that the Republican Party of Iowa has this whole year compared to the Iowa Democratic Party is they've got candidates coming in that's going to build attendance at these events. It's going to help the party raise money. It's going to help the party get people signed up to volunteer. So all in all, this is going to be a very important event for Iowa Republicans.
And it'll be a national story. The networks will be here. Everybody's going to be here. This is a big event where all the candidates are going to appear. Nikki Haley's going to speak first. Ryan Binkley will be number 10, and former President Trump will be 13th. I think that's a good spot for Ryan Binkley.
I think so. And I mean, Vivek Ramaswamy is going to be 12th leading up to Trump. I mean, I think that that's a good spot for him, honestly. And he is a very energetic speaker and tends to get the crowd fired up. And I think that it's going to benefit him, but it's also going to benefit Donald Trump, I think, to have the crowd already fired up when he takes the stage.
We may spend a minute or two on Monday talking about this.
Yes. And we'll see whether Donald Trump agrees to have his mic cut after 10 minutes.
Then there's the Iowa State Fair, August 10th to the 20th. Now you say, wait a minute, Dennis, why are you talking about the Iowa State Fair? Because they're butter cows and all this stuff. Yes, but the governor has invited all the GOP presidential candidates to join her in one-on-one conversations at the State Fair in an obvious effort to keep them away from the Des Moines Register's podium site. This is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, the Des Moines Register has not published the schedule yet for their political soapbox, but I do expect that most of the Republican candidates will probably opt not to participate in the soapbox. They'll do these sit downs with Governor Reynolds. Typically, Governor Reynolds goes to the fair every day for the entire 11 days of the state fair. It's one of her favorite things. She always has a very full day, packed schedule. And so this year with all the presidential candidates, I don't know that every single one will go to the fair, but I think the vast majority of them will, because this is a great way to connect with a lot of Iowans and to get free media coverage.
And very quickly, with a couple of minutes left, we want to move on to something else. Governor Reynolds said last week in a news conference, state realignment is operational, cutting the number of state agencies, and she says saving a lot of money.
Well, and this is disputed. The governor has said repeatedly that this realignment plan of reducing the number of agencies from 37 to 16 is going to save $215 million over the next 4 years. But the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency estimated that the realignment would save about $50 million over 4 years, so about $12.5 million a year. So we're going to see how this goes. I mean, I think that there are going to be some kinks still to be worked out. One of the lobbyists this spring told me that they should call this realignment plan the Full Lobbyist Employment Act, because he anticipated that next year there are going to be lots of fixes, people lobbying for the legislature to make some changes, tinkering with this or that in the plan. And I'm going to be looking at some specific aspects, particularly the change of vocational rehab. Those are services for Iowans with disabilities. That was moved from the Department of Education to Workforce Development. And in the disability community, people expressed a lot of concern. So that's not something that the governor directly addressed last week. And I'm going to be looking into how well that shift is going.
And 30 seconds, we have a new state slogan. The governor unveiled it last week. Iowa, freedom to flourish. Gone is fields of opportunities. Freedom to flourish.
Yes, and this has a little bit of Christian overtones. I mean, if you Google that phrase, there are books. That's something that is used in some Christian communities. But immediately, I think a lot of people started joking that flee to flourish, that Reagan shirts already had a shirt the next day. And the Democrats were very critical of this idea that there's freedom, and they pointing to the abortion ban and some other laws that maybe are restrictive of freedom. But in any case, this branding is going on. It's on websites. It's going to be going on road signs all around the state. And this federal funding from the American Rescue Plan was used to develop this marketing plan for the state.
We're out of time, Laura. See you next week.
See you next week, Dennis.
We'll be back here in the same time slot. And as usual, we'll talk about everything interesting or important or even entertaining, if I may clear my throat, that takes place in Iowa politics. You have the freedom to listen. That's our slogan on this broadcast. Thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. Between now and next time, have a good rag, Bri, and have a safe, healthy, and happy week.